Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
And we're back for another edition of the Last Round Podcast here in 2024. Thank you again for joining us, whether you're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, wherever you're at, however you're listening, or you're on Twitter or X. I still need to get used to that, whether it's X or Twitter. This name interchanges all the time. It's all changes interchangeably. I don't know if I said that right. Oh, well, jumping right back into it. Fight review this past Saturday, the 13th of January, from Quebec City in Canada, the country of Canada, on ESPN Plus for the IBF, WBC, and WBO, light heavyweight championship of the world. Artur Beterbiev gets a 7th round TKO stoppage over Callum Smith, who takes the second loss of his professional career, with the first one coming from Saul Canelo Alvarez a couple years back. I believe that was a fight in Texas, if I'm not mistaken. So, obviously, we talked about this fight last week, previewed it, and there was a lot of people, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but you might have picked Callum Smith, but there's a lot of people putting money on Callum Smith. Maybe, okay, you're shaking your head no, so you didn't. No, I don't. Neither of us picked Smith, but there was a lot of people in the boxing sphere, the boxing world, I guess, is an online world, as you want to call it, that were leaning towards Smith, you know, saying, hey, he's at 175, he feels out better, it's a higher weight for him, it's a more appropriate weight for him. And then the betting odds and the betting lines were kind of getting, man, just like anything, but they were getting a lot closer, and then the money for Callum Smith was becoming a lot more attractive. Well, you know, and then everybody, I feel like the last, I don't even know, X amount of fights that Beterbiev's been in, everybody says, well, he is getting older. He's 38 or 39 now. I think he's 38. And, you know, Father Time is undefeated. We've talked about that before. But, you know, like you said, like we just talked about, we both picked Beterbiev to win either by knockout or stoppage or one or the other. And that's exactly what happened. I saw that during the exchange, Beterbiev kind of went with an uppercut. I believe it was a right-hand uppercut, if I'm not mistaken. Could have been left hand, but I think it was a right-hand uppercut that landed on the jugular throat area of Callum Smith. And if you watch the slowdown punch, slowdown video of that punch to the throat, man, that was brutal. That was brutal, and that spelled the beginning of the end for Callum Smith. Were you surprised, Mike? What'd you think? You picked Beterbiev.
Not surprised at all, to be honest with you. I'm not really too sure why. And maybe it was just like the old, you know, backer Brit. That's why I like Eddie Hearn and a lot of the British people, like journalists, fighters and stuff like that, decided to back Callum. Based off what? You know? His biggest ever victory is probably when he beat a one-handed George Groves in the World Boxing Super Series final. He arguably lost to John Ryder, was completely well beaten by Canelo. And I would have said, if anything, you know, Ryder and maybe Canelo, the styles is, that they kind of implemented to beat Callum Smith were similar-ish maybe to Beterbiev, who just kind of is just a juggernaut, isn't he? He just keeps coming, cuts the ring off, hugely powerful. And you can see that Callum Smith just couldn't really handle it. You know, Beterbiev's jab was probably the best it's ever been. At what age, 39, was he? He looked really good, you know, really, really good. And yeah, Callum Smith, I think he's, in terms of, you know, what he's achieved in and his resume, massively kind of overachieved, really. He's had a, you know, unified super middleweight world champion, world boxing super series, and just kind of got people at the right time, you know. George Groves, you know, beaten by Callum Smith and retired swiftly afterwards. Didn't really see it. I think I pretty much picked, you know, that he was going to lose by knockout. And I think I was maybe wrong by the round. I think I had it later when we did the guesses last week. But at least it gives us the big fight we've all been looking for. You know, Beterbiev and Bivol, hopefully, is it like March or April time in Saudi? So looking forward to that. That's going to be a great clash of styles.
Before we move on to the whole Bivol matchup later this year, which is, I think that's a straight 50-50 fight, especially after this performance from Beterbiev. I saw on Twitter, somebody was talking about fantasy matchups, like, oh, okay, what if Beterbiev would have fought Andre Ward, you know, how would a potential fantasy matchup like that? Normally for these fantasy matchups, I'm not really like, you know, that's why it's a fantasy. It's fun to talk about, but we really don't dive into that so much here on the show. But I thought that intrigued me a little bit. Beterbiev, Andre Ward fantasy matchup, obviously at 175, both of their weights. Andre Ward did show, you talked about Beterbiev's jab, how it was very strong, very prominent in this fight against Callum Smith. And Sergey Kovalev, the Crusher, was known for a very, very strong jab. And in the first fight against Andre Ward, he showed that. Some people thought that Kovalev should have won that fight. And Beterbiev, at least in this Callum Smith fight, showed that he's got a pretty strong jab too. Let's just give me your take. How would a fantasy matchup between Beterbiev and Ward, if you just had to break it down, just off of your mind?
That's a good one. I'm trying to think who Ward struggled with. Did he struggle with anybody that was similar to Beterbiev?
Sullivan Barrera? Barwell.
He's just not as strong. It's a good fight. Maybe Beterbiev is just like a late round kind of stoppage. He just kind of breaks him down because it's kind of like, okay, can Andre Ward stay away from Beterbiev for the whole of the 36 minutes? Because he just keeps coming and coming and doesn't, kind of like how Canelo did to Callum Smith. It doesn't matter where he hits you, you know, shoulders, arms, biceps, you know, anywhere on the torso. It just breaks you down because he's so freaking heavy handed. I'd maybe go with Beterbiev after that. I have super late round stoppage.
But it's an interesting matchup, like, just to think about. And like I said, normally these fantasy matchups, it's like, oh, you know, it is what it is. But that one really popped out and intrigued me. I was like, oh, that would have been interesting. That would have definitely been an interesting matchup. But talking about Beterbiev and Bivol, both have all the titles. Or Bivol has a WBA light heavyweight title, 175 pounds. Artur Beterbiev has all the other titles, IBF, WBC, and WBO. So we're going to have an undisputed fight. It seems like it is going to happen, and it'll happen in Saudi Arabia. I know the Excellency, he tweeted out.
Jesse Vargas?
Yeah, exactly. he tweeted out after Beterbiev's fight something about that, so that's pretty good news. Yeah, we're going to see a Beterbiev Bivol fight. I think that's, I mean, for the year, if you think about it, what 50-50 fight for this year in 2024 is probably closer than that right now?
That could potentially be made, you mean? Is that?
Yes.
Oof. Yeah.
I think that's it.
Fury, Joshua, I don't think that's a 50-50. I think Fury.
No, I don't think that's 50-50 either.
Big fights, boot tennis and Crawford, would you say that's...
No, I don't think that's 50-50 either.
Benavidez.
They're good fights. These are good fights you're mentioning, but like I'm talking about like legit 50-50.
Benavidez, Canelo, no? Would you say that?
I don't think that's 50-50 either. That's just me. But I'm talking about like, even Bivol Benavidez. What about Beterbiev Benavidez? Like, nobody talks about that. Obviously, Canelo's the big dog between 160 and 175. Benavidez is a Mexican monster. That's what they call him. Or he gets the nickname from somewhere. You know, and the big money fight is Canelo. But I think I've said it before. A Benavidez-Bivol fight is a lot more competitive, I think, between those two than a Benavidez-Canelo fight. And I didn't even think about Beterbiev Benavidez. Imagine what a war zone that would be.
You think we see two? Bivol and Beterbiev, you think there's a rematch? No one's asked yet, I don't think.
I could see it. I could see it.
Because they both got titles, aren't they? So they're, you know.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see it. Honestly, after they win, or whoever wins that fight, even if there is no rematch, honestly, I'd be calling Benavidez out. You know, that's a big money fight. I would. I'd be calling Benavidez out. You know, Bivol's already shown that he could beat Canelo.
The problem we have there is it's a great fight on paper, like you say, but I'm sure Benavidez is kind of hoping, like, okay, I'm waiting for that Canelo money. You
know? Yeah, yeah, of course. That's
the gravy train.
The financial incentive is huge for Canelo, so that's understandable. But a Bivol Benavidez fight, or a better Biev Benavidez fight, think about all those together. Like, those in terms of competition, obviously blockbuster, money, attention. Canelo Benavidez is the fight. But I'm talking about competitiveness. Bivol Benavidez, better Biev Benavidez. You interchange all those three, like, in terms of competition, that those are all close fights. And people forget that. You know, and Benavidez, like, I mean, who knows if he can make 168 later this year. Like, you know, like, Canelo hasn't announced his next fight for May, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be Benavidez. Maybe it's September. But, you know, Benavidez has shown that he kind of blows up in between fights in terms of weight. Seems like he's a lot more comfortable at 175. A round robin between Beterbiev, Bivol, Benavidez at 175. You talk about boxing skill and war fights. That's it right there. Those three, just interchanging.
It's going to be interesting where they go.
Yeah.
If she's like, if there's no rematch, like, where did they go? Because Beterbiev is pretty, he's completed that division.
Yeah.
You know, does he go to cruiser, like, just to kind of for like legacy? Does he just retire because he's, you know, nearly 40?
Honestly, like I told you, if I was Beterbiev, I'd call obviously you can call it Canelo, like, oh, Canelo. I call it Canelo and Beterbiev. If Beterbiev wins, I'd call out Canelo and Benavidez. Be like, let's fight 175. Because he'd make more money with either of those guys.
The lucky thing for Callum Smith after this fight is the British division. You know, you've got like Dan Aziz, Bouazzi, Lyndon Arthur. Like, he can go, he can still drop down a level or two and still kind of make some good money on the UK show.
Right. No, exactly. So either way, it seems like it's very likely we're going to get Beterbiev Bivol. And honestly, that's a 50-50 fight to me, man. And I know people are like, well, Beterbiev just showed that he still got it. Like, he's still knocking guys out. You're right. He's got power. But Bivol's a slick boxer, man. He's got a high IQ. And he just fought a couple months ago, too. And he looked great. So, you know, as of right now, it's a 50-50 fight. And, you know, I wouldn't even know who to pick right now. As it gets closer, obviously, we would dissect it. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that fight, man. That's in terms of competitiveness, 50-50. I don't think it gets in at the moment, at least for this year. Beterbiev Bivol, that's the fight right now, 175. So yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Good thing or bad thing that these are all going to Saudi? Good for the boxers, right? Because I'm sure they're getting paid more.
Oh yeah, well, they're getting paid, but like, obviously, there's pros and cons, but from a fan's perspective, from, you know, these fights are at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It takes away from the spectacle from watching at night, having people over, having parties, these big fight events. And it severely hinders the chance to go attend the fights. It's not in New York. It's not in Las Vegas. It's not in LA. It's not in Texas. You know, it's, the chances to go attend something like that are extremely limited. I mean, I know people are like, oh no, they're not. I've went to it. I mean, they're a lot more limited than traveling within the States. That's what I'm saying. So, but they have so much money over there because of the oil that they can make these fights. because they're like, oh yeah, we can pay it, and they can lose money and they're still trillionaires. So it doesn't matter that they know that, you know? So I guess it's, from a selfish perspective, I'm going to say it. I'd rather see them in the United States. But then again, then you see, you'd probably wait a lot longer for these fights to materialize because the money won't be there. But, you know, at least we get to enjoy these fights closer to us. We have chances to go to them in a realistic fashion. But it is what it is. You know, people can look at it from the other side and say, well, no, at least these fights get to get made a lot sooner because of the money out there. That's true. You know, I acknowledge that. But if you're asking my opinion, I'd rather keep them over here in the United States. That's just me. It is what it is. Better Beev at the time of the stoppage was up on the scorecards 58-56 twice and 59-55. So in the seventh round stoppage, he was up on the scorecards. But Better Beev is a KO artist. So he's the guy right now at 175 pounds. So him and Bivol is going to be a crazy, crazy fight. I'm definitely looking forward to that. Somebody's not getting up in that fight. Moving on, also on that card, Jason Maloney from Australia gets the majority decision win over Saul Sanchez. This was for the WBO Bantamweight Championship of the World. Maloney gets the victory by scores of 116, 112 twice, and then 114, 114. The third judge scored a draw. Maloney was making the first defense of his title that he won last year, last May, I believe. But this was a good fight. It was a competitive fight. You know, I think Sanchez really gave it. I mean, I think he tried to take advantage of the opportunity as much as he could. But obviously, Maloney's the kind of depends. But if Sanchez wins, you throw back, you know, you bring him back to the States. You know, he can fight in Texas, LA. I mean, were you surprised? Did you agree with this decision?
Yeah, I mean, I had Maloney just winning. I didn't expect the fireworks, and I didn't expect the fight to be as good as it was. You know, I can see, you know, Mayhem Maloney. I can say, okay, I understand where that name comes from now. I thought Sanchez did really well.
That's his nickname? I didn't even know that.
Yeah. You can see, you know, Sanchez came in, gave it everything he did, and, you know, it's one of those ones where, like, okay, you got a world title shot, but he can go home and be like, you know what, like, I left everything in the ring. There was, you know, there's no like, okay, you know, I could have given a little bit more. Like, I kind of started too slow. I ended too slowly, something like that. I thought he gave a great account of himself, and definitely one of those fights where like both of them can walk away with the head held high. And Sanchez, hopefully, will get some more chances, especially for TV, because that was just an unbelievable fight. Probably up there for, you know, fight of the year already. You know, at what, January the 14th we're on today. So yeah, I thought it was good. I thought Maloney probably did just sneak it. And, you know, there's some big, big fights looking forward for him. And, you know, 33 years old, you can get him in there with what, like Emmanuel Rodriguez, maybe, Nonito Donaire, someone like that.
Those are good names. Those are good names around that weight class right now.
Yeah. And the guy that kind of jumped onto the scene, Alexandro Santiago.
Yeah.
Good Mexican to fight. You know, I know that Maloney's come over to Vegas, you know, sometimes train at the top rank gym over in Vegas, so it's not too far away from there. But yeah, good win for, you know, the Maloney twins. Good win for one of them. Obviously, they've been on the show many moons ago.
Yeah, they've been on before. And CompuBox for this fight, according to their stats, Sanchez landed 362 of his 897 punches. For a 40% connect rate, and Maloney landed 297 of 824 for 36%. So, you know, I know people look at stats and stuff like that, like, oh, this guy landed more, he should have won. Like, I mean, when you're watching there in person, it's a lot more difficult. And if you look at these stats, they're pretty close. They're pretty close. So it was obviously a close fight. But I think Sanchez is still a player in that division at bantamweight, so he'll still land some fights. But it was an excellent fight. I mean, you know, maybe they'll rematch again later this year or something, you know. Who knows? It's not like bantamweight and so, you know, unless you want to move up and fight the monster, you know, the monster in a way, a super bantamweight. So you never know.
Maloney fought him back in.
Was it Jason Maloney who fought him? Was his
brother? Yeah, fought him back in. It was a couple of years ago, wasn't it? When he had that fight against 2020.
He went to Japan too, huh?
No, that one was in the bubble.
Was that the only time Inoue fought over here?
That was when he fought here in, you know, 2020, October the 31st in the bubble, MGM Grand. He lost by 7th round KO, and it was for the IBF and WBA super bantamweight.
That's crazy, man. That's crazy. And Inoue hasn't been back since, but it's because he's such a star in Japan. He can make so much money, so I completely understand that. Also on the card, Christian Mbili. Did I pronounce that right, or is it Mbili?
Yeah, I say the same. That's Mbili.
Mbili remains undefeated at 26-0 with the 6-round decision over Rohan Murdoch, who takes the 3rd loss of his career. What'd you think about this performance?
I liked him. I think he's a really good fighter. I'd like to see more like over here. He just seems to give everything, and he looks like an Adonis. You know, he's got that kind of like real sportsman look. I think it's a big step up though, because I know people were saying, weren't they, like he called out Canelo, and then people were talking about fighting David Morrell, and I'm like, okay, dude, that's kind of like a huge, huge leap to go from like Rohan Murdoch, like up to someone like David Morrell or Canelo. But hey, you know, he's calling for it. Maybe he knows something that we don't, or something like that, or maybe he's just been like avoided for so long because he's obviously been unbeaten. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do plot him out. But so far, he's doing what I think we want to see him do. He's getting people out of there. Good TV fighter, I think so far. So I'd like to see him more this year. It'd be kind of interesting to see him get him out like 2 or 3 times, gradually stepping up every single time, still see if he's able to do what he has been doing, and then fight someone like a David Morrell. I think that's a step too far right now.
I know Morrell's there waiting in the wings for his big moment, huh? His big shot. Yeah, he's definitely in and around the weight class. Moving on to fight previews, this upcoming Saturday, the 20th of January, from the Echo Arena in Liverpool, Natasha Jonas, 14-2-1, goes up against Michaela Mayer, 19-1, for the IBF Welterweight Championship of the World. This is actually a pretty close fight. What do you think about this fight?
Good fight. Should be... The problem I have with it is they always go 10 rounds, you know?
Yeah.
You don't get any knockouts. You don't get any knockdowns. Because if you look at it like Taylor Serrano, no knockdowns, no knockout. Taylor Chantel Cameron, 2 fights, no knockdowns, no knockout.
You think instead of going 3-minute rounds, if they just extended it from 10 to 12 rounds, would that help? Or would it still be the same outcome if you had to just speculate?
I think any of those changes, you know, like maybe to 12, see if that helps in terms of, you know, getting like knockdowns and knockouts and stuff like that. Because the problem you have is once you get like 4 or 5 rounds in, you're like, okay, for example, you know, Jonas is kind of beating Michaela Mayer. You don't need to watch the rest of it because there's nobody that's got the power to knock anybody out. There's no fight like, say, like a Deontay Wilder where you're like, okay, you know, flipping Jonas is 10 rounds up against Mayer, then boom, Mayer knocks her out. It doesn't happen ever.
Right.
Ever. No, I think the only biggish fight I can remember with a knockout, Bumgarner, when she beat Terry Harper and she stopped her standing on her feet.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was a nice shot.
Bumgarner, Mayer, that went all of the rounds. You know, just none of the big fights. Clarissa Shields has what, like 2 knockouts or something like that in her entire career. So that's
even, the even Katie Taylor, Serrano, as big as an event, and it was like, yep. Yeah, I mean, it's just the nature of the game, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean,
you kind of have to accept from female boxing.
Yeah, I think hopefully over time, you know, as they get more money comes into the female side, and you know, maybe we get like better, stronger athletes and stuff like that. Where, you know, maybe better technique, or they move to 12 rounds or 3-minute rounds. Hopefully, we start to see that, because obviously we've seen the evolution of, you know, female MMA, and hopefully we get the same sort of thing in, you know, female boxing, because at the minute it just, it gets boring, and I'm like, we're boxing nerds. I watch them all, and I'm just like, okay, like, could kind of turn this off now, because, you know, Jonas has won 7 rounds, so she's won, because there's not going to be any knockdowns, there's not going to be any knockouts. So you can kind of play on your phone, go and get some food, go and get a beer, do whatever you want, because you already know the outcome. And it's sad. It really is sad, because it's not what we want, especially with them headlining, and they keep pushing them to the front of cards to try and show off, like, hey, look at us, we put female fights on. But you're like, you shouldn't, not at the minute, maybe further down the card, because they don't sell. They don't sell, unfortunately. It's sad to say it, but it's the truth. They don't really sell. You know, they give away tickets and stuff like that, and this card is pretty crap all the way through, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah. And look at, I mean, you know, Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano, that fight didn't get made until Jake Paul got involved. Even Eddie Hearn said that. Like, Jake Paul being involved got that fight over the line because of the, you know, financial purses and everything. Like, beforehand, it couldn't be made. Like, it just financially wasn't plausible. And then Jake Paul getting involved got that fight across the finish line because of finances. The attention he brought to the fight, you know, helped the publicity. So, you know,
it's like
Saudi Arabia. We were talking about having fights over there. That's what they're doing. They have so much money in their government because of the oil in the Middle East. There's so much oil over there and the properties they have. They can afford to do that. It's the same thing. You know, it comes down to finances.
Yeah. It's like Jake Paul. And it's like, you see McGregor now, you know, kind of pops up everywhere. He's sponsoring everything, which I'm assuming helps, obviously, you know, some of the fighters get bigger purses, you know, when you've got his whiskey and his beer, you know, sponsoring things. I'm sure that generates, you know, more money for everybody, hopefully, on the cards.
Yeah, absolutely. Also on the card, Jack Cullen, 22-4-1, goes up against Zach Chelly, 14-2-1. This is for the British and Commonwealth super middleweight title. I mean, these are pretty, like, we've talked about, obviously, these titles before in the past. They're like that good stepping stone to the next level, right? So who do you pick in this fight?
Probably the best fight on the card, this, in my opinion. Chelly at times can be a little bit more of a brawler, kind of overpowers people, you know, throws a lot of heavy punches and stuff like that. So he can kind of tire himself out, because he is a big, muscle-bound type of guy. Jack Cullen, I would say, is probably a little bit more of a boxer. I think I'm going to go Cullen, maybe on points, because I think Chelly's last couple of performances did look a little bit, I don't know, like a little bit, not as good, a little bit like he's going a little bit backwards, I guess, maybe because he's stepping up. Obviously, the level's getting better. So I'm thinking I'm going to go Jack Cullen, I think, on points.
I can see that. I can definitely see that. Moving on to news and notes section of this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast, a junior lightweight fight between Oscar Valdez and Liam Wilson is being finalized, according to reports, for March 29th in Arizona, Glendale, Arizona, to be exact. Obviously, this will be an ESPN fight, a top rank fight, and all that. I think it's a pretty good fight. You got to give it to Valdez. Valdez stays active regardless of the losses he's taken to, you know, Stevenson, you know, obviously was a big one and all that. Valdez for top rank, you know, during his contract with them, as you know, he's been with them for quite a few years now. He's been pretty reliable. You know, he's stayed active. He goes out there. He fights a couple times a year. I mean, what else could you ask for from a fighter under your promotion, right?
No, he's good. Good fighters. Obviously, he stepped up, you know, way a couple of years back now. But yeah, he definitely stays active, even though, you know, he had that loss to Shakur Stevenson. You know, hasn't really shied away from coming back out and taking some big fights. This would be a decent fight. If you remember, Wilson actually dropped Navarrete and then ended up getting stopped later in the fight. But
right, that was a good fight.
Yeah, it was a good fight. I think people were like, oh my God, like, you know, Navarrete's huge.
And both him and Valdez lost to Navarrete too.
Yeah, so it should be kind of like a little crossroads fight. Like, okay, they both fought Navarrete, both lost. Let's now face them against each other. So it should be an interesting fight, but, you know, it's kind of early. But I think I would probably go with Valdez. I think he's probably been in the bigger
Yeah, Mike, me too.
Been tested the harder, and he's probably got the better amateur career, the better pedigree. I think.
Yeah,
I would go with Valdez to win that.
And Valdez hasn't fought since at least last August, which wasn't that far away already. It's a couple months back when he lost to Navarrete in a points loss. Obviously, he's ranked at number six by ESPN in junior lightweight, and then Liam Wilson had two decision wins in Australia last year, following his February defeat to Navarrete as well. So Navarrete, you know, beats Wilson, beats Valdez, now putting them together, it's pretty good. Adds to the narrative, like, hey, both of these guys lost to this guy, now they're just put them against each other. You got to give it the top rank, man. They do a good job at matchmaking, and it works out. It's for the story, for the narrative. You got to definitely give it to them. And then also Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., the son of the legendary Mexican boxer Julio Cesar Chavez, was arrested within the last week in Los Angeles, and he was released Thursday night from a Los Angeles jail and is reported to have entered a residential treatment program also in Los Angeles, according to his attorney, Lupe Valencia, who also, you know, represents Ryan Garcia and others, which I think is interesting because Chavez Jr. has said in the past that Lupe Valencia was like a crook and like he severed ties with him. And then Lupe Valencia popped up out of nowhere here. So I guess they've mended fences there, and maybe that hit his attorney now. But Chavez Jr. has said in interviews in the past like that Lupe Valencia was a crook and he wanted nothing to do with him, and he parted ways with the guy. But I guess they kissed and made up. So who knows? But Chavez Jr., you know, he's just been having a rough year or two. And his dad, Chavez Sr., has posted videos online in Spanish, obviously, but saying that, you know, they've been trying to help his son, Chavez Jr., and trying to figure it out. But it's a tough, you know, the guy's going through a tough battle, man. You know, hopefully he's okay. What else could you say? You know, hopefully it works out for the guy, but he seems like he's been having a rough couple years. And, you know, it is what it is. And it's kind of interesting too, because his dad, you know, Chavez Sr. had his party lifestyle when he was fighting, and then he ended up opening a bunch of rehab centers in Mexico, throughout Mexico. So, you know, and now his son, his only, no, it's not, I don't think it's his only son, you know, but his one who became the most successful boxer is now going through a lot of this stuff. So it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. Hopefully it works out for Chavez Jr., but, you know, he's obviously going through a rough time in his life. So hopefully it works out for him and his family and all that. And then also the monster Naoya Inoue and Lewis Nery have agreed to a deal for a May fight in Tokyo, Japan, for Inoue's undisputed junior featherweight championship. According to ESPN, Inoue, 26-0 with 23 knockouts, got ESPN Fighter of the Year honors when he KO'd Marlon Tapales in round 10 this past December to become undisputed champion, beating out Terrence Crawford and all that. So there was some controversy there, but I agree. I think Inoue, at least to me, is the fighter of the year.
Deep Fulton as well, same year.
Yeah, he was on a roll, man. He was definitely on a roll. Like you said, yeah, he beat Fulton in a TKO win last July. Claimed two titles in his debut at 122 pounds. And then Nery, I think his last fight, I believe his last fight, I saw him here in the Los Angeles area, just outside Los Angeles in Pomona, California, at the Pomona Fox Theater, I believe. When he fought there, that was a great fight too. And he was there. I remember asking him some questions in the post-fight media scrum. But the thing with Nery, a lot of people don't remember, because it's been quite a few years now. In the past, and I'm assuming it's still current, but if they announce this fight, or it's going to be announced, I'm sure Japan probably already took it away, but he had received an indefinite suspension from the Japan Boxing Commission in March 2018. But at least according to this news, it seems like he's going to be reinstated. Money talks, right? Money talks. You know, what else can you say?
Yeah, money talks, and I'm sure the officials for the Japanese Boxing Commission are like, you know what? We'll reinstate him so we can see Inoue kick his butt, kind of like get some payback.
And yeah, I can see that. Yeah, no, I can definitely see that. So, but either way, I'm excited to see this fight because I remember asking Lewis Neary in his fight last year. I don't know if it was last year or the year before. I forget. It might have been last year, earlier last year or something, when he fought in the Los Angeles area. I asked him, I was like, do you think you're the monster of I believe super bantamweight? And then he said, he's like, I'm the monster of this division. So I think I tweeted that out. We tweeted that out online. So there's a video on there. We'll share it again as it gets closer. But yeah, man, regardless, you got to give it to these guys going up against each other. And the monster just doesn't stop, man. He does not stop. This guy's definitely a generational talent. And we should enjoy him while it lasts. So I hope he comes over to the States again and fights over here so people can get a chance to see him in person. Because, yeah, this guy's definitely a generational talent, regardless of the rest of his career. You know, he's done his thing. And then Vasily Lomachenko and George Kambosos Jr. Has also been reported for the vacant IBF lightweight title of the world and will reportedly take place on May 12th in Australia. So for Kambosos, Lomachenko's traveling to Australia. So, hey, you gotta give it to that too. I mean, that's a decent fight too. You know, you gotta give it to Kambosos too. He's trying to stay active, and he's had pretty excellent fights, pretty good matchups the last couple of years. Ever since winning that Teofimo fight, you know, beat Teofimo, fought Devin Haney twice, now fighting Lomachenko. You gotta give it to him, man. He's on a good run, whether it's wins or losses.
Hughes, Lee Selby,
yeah,
little silly Lomachenko, like he's making the most of it, you know, like trying to get all those big paydays, which, you know, the gladiators, right? You know, that's what they're paid for, the prize fighters. So yeah, he's definitely decided to do it the right way and, you know, creamed as much money out of it as he can. Interesting fight though. You know, I think, you know, in my opinion, I think Loma probably runs rings around him, becomes IBF champion again.
Yeah, yeah. And then people are after him again because he has a title. And then also Crawford and Spence rematch might be off, according to some tweets that Terrence Crawford has sent out. And then Errol Spence posted a video that he had some type of procedure, or then he also said that his eye or something, like he kind of implied that he had trouble in the Crawford fight. That's why he didn't fight as well. That's why kind of he lost, you know. I mean, one or whatever, it is what it is, right? And then Crawford had some cryptic tweets. It seems like that rematch is off. I mean, is anybody honestly surprised? I'm not surprised.
And it took that long, you know. When was the original fight now? Was it last Easter or last summer?
It was last July, I think.
Was it? It seems to have taken a long time. And then,
I mean, I'm not surprised. I'm really not surprised.
It kind of sucks, but Crawford's not getting any younger, like us all, right? And it's,
I mean, have him fight Ennis. Why not?
Yeah, that's what I'd like to see, especially since, just to kind of like pad his record out a little bit, you know, just get some people like in their prime, just so there's no debates over how good Crawford was, because he's kind of sat around a little bit, hasn't he, waiting for some of these, you know, like the Errol Spence fight originally, and then obviously the rematch now and stuff like that. So he's had a little bit of time away. You know, we want to see the best fight the best, right? You know, especially, you know, when it's getting so close, Crawford is so close to retirement now. It's, you know, he's probably got another, what, two, maybe three fights if he just tries to cram them all in this year. So,
maybe. Yeah,
hopefully we see him in there with someone like a Boots, or I was going to say Virgil Ortiz, but he's stepped up now, hasn't he? So,
well, Crawford said he's going to move up too. I mean, I think if a shot at Virgil happened at 154 and it was plausible, I think Crawford would still do it, you know, because I don't think he's going to get Charlo. He's not going to get Charlo. Like, I honestly don't think Crawford is, I don't know, it could be wrong because maybe he does have some type of deal with Al Haymon or something. Who knows? Maybe not. But at this point, I don't see Crawford fighting another PBC guy in his next fight. because I think it was just, I think the only deal he had was for a Spence first fight and rematch and all that. So, yeah, I don't see him find another PBC guy in his next fight, at least.
Hopefully not, because we'll see him in there with fucking Robert Guerrero or Andre Berto, won't we?
You never know, man. You never know. Crazier things have happened in boxing. Crazier things have happened. For once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast here in 2024. Another year as we enter our sixth year as a podcast in the sport of boxing. Thank you for being along for the ride with us. But for you, before we sign off, once again, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter, or X as it's now called. Be sure to join us next week. We'll be previewing the big fight between Jaime Munguia and John Ryder.
Looking forward to that one. Definitely looking forward to that one, because maybe Canelo in May for Munguia. Like I said, I'm a fan of that. I'd want to see it. I'd want to see it. So for once again, from my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.